This is Biz. I'm a part-time working mom with a big kid and a little kid.
And I'm Teresa. I have a family business, two young kids, and a baby.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, being flexible and adjustable hurts. Plus, the walls are talking to Biz. Teresa made it! And we talked to blogger, author Lee Nguyen about LGBTQ literature.
Woo!
Oh, you made it, you made it. But before we get into that, I have two things to say. One, a few weeks ago on our Genius Fail Spectacular, we had one of our callers call in about their kid getting a hold of one of those Cascade soap dish packets, eating it, and she called poison control, all that good stuff. She had also mentioned in that making her kid throw up. And thanks to our...
And in our response to that, I said, you did all the right things, making your kid throw up, calling poison control.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah. Let's take a second to go back to the fact that we are not a parenting...
We don't...
Actually, we don't know.
We're not experts, but also we don't know anything, you guys.
We would also, in the same situation...
Freak out
and stick our finger.
Probably would call poison control too.
Yes. But the point of this is that lovely listeners, in the most lovely of ways, let us know that making your child throw up, actually not what you're supposed to do.
It's not always recommended.
It's not always recommended.
So you call poison control
first.
They will tell you what to do.
Yes. The takeaway is call poison control first. Before you do anything.
Yeah.
And as always, the poison control people are our favorite people in the world.
Yeah, they're the best.
They are the least judging people of all.
Yeah. So, and just to be clear, sometimes making your kid throw up can actually be worse for your child than the thing that they ingested, which is why...
You want to wait.
Call poison control.
Right.
They will tell you what to do.
That, yes. And again, also not saying that maybe throwing up isn't something they'll tell you to do.
It might sometimes be it, but we're just
poison
saying.
Poison control first.
Yeah. And don't listen to us.
Don't listen to us for anything, guys. All right. So, except for this.
Only laugh at us.
Except for this next thing, which is we're going to be live in Brooklyn, New York, giving out all kind of horrible information.
Yeah.
October 14th. At the Bell House, 7 o'clock show, 6 o'clock doors open. Ophira Eisenberg is going to be our guest.
Yay!
And here's a special treat, guys. Adira Amram and The Experience will be performing the Mom Song live.
So good.
Everybody freak the fuck out.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be so much fun.
I'm already getting chills.
I'm
just
tearing
like imagining.
Up. Yeah. Not being home.
Yeah.
Being in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Teresa,
you
made it. You're here. Good job.
Thank you.
How are you?
Oh, my God. First of all, I did an amazing job this morning. I just have to say that.
You did.
This morning, it's Monday morning. I am alone in my house right now with my children because my husband has been... away for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's been gone a very long time.
It's been such a long time. And I'm really lucky because both my mom and my dad separately at different times came and helped out for several days each and really saved my ass.
Yeah.
But there have been some days in between help where I've been on my own and there's been some hard, challenging difficulties. It feels like Jesse has been gone for like 1,000 years. Like I feel like... the baby is different now than when he left. Like, we've been doing sleep training. He's eating solids. Like, there's so much different. Grace has been having all this stuff going on in school that I've been dealing with. And Jesse's been supportive, but he's in London. It's like a totally different time there.
Yeah.
Everything is just so much of life has happened in his absence, which is actually, to me, really sad.
Well,
And then, like, on top of that, I'm just working my ass off, you know? But a couple things really good happened in the last 24 hours, which is that, like, so my mom left yesterday morning, and my mom is, like, really like worried that I can't survive like the next 2 days until Jesse gets home, like without her. And so she's like feeling really bad that she has to leave and go home and go back to work. And so she came up with this scheme that she basically like bribed my kids for me. Like I didn't even have to do it. Like she was like, what did they want? Like they want, like they both want like a little Optimus Prime like action figure.
Sure.
Which are actually more expensive than I thought they were going to be. But
a surprise?
Whatever. Yeah. It's fine. She was like, what do you want them to do today? And so I gave her like a list of three things. I was like, I want them to listen to me and be a helper.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to go to their swim lessons and don't argue about it. Yep. And I want them to be quiet at bedtime because you guys know the kids all share a room with the baby. And they did all those things for a toy.
Yeah.
They were, it was complete bribery.
Fine.
Or incentivizing or whatever. And it worked so well. And I had like, everybody was asleep by like a reasonable hour last night. So I had time to like watch a show and like just chill out, just, you know, recover. And then this morning, up super early. And it was like, I had to get everybody ready and out of the house, get Grace to school Monday morning on time.
Yeah.
We walk her all the way in with the baby and Oscar, then take Oscar to school, get him settled. And then get the baby home to the babysitter and get myself here.
Sure.
And so it was going to be major. And I just did it. Like, I totally did it. And everything was fine. Everybody cooperated.
Wow.
Everybody was okay. There were, like, a few little hiccups, but I managed very well through the hiccups. So I actually feel really proud.
Good
right
job. Well, I was going to say, I feel like this is one of those like genius moments.
Kinda.
I mean, like that unrecognized effort
that's
and
why
work.
I'm saying it here, because I feel like I don't know what I would say elsewhere. Like, hey, I did a great job getting everybody where they needed to be today. Like, nobody cares.
I care.
Thank you, Biz.
And I totally understand
Thank you.
How difficult that all is.
Thank you.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, good job.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm on the other side of Stefan being gone on an epically long trip, and he leaves in a few days for another epically long trip.
And then he'll come home, and then there'll be another epically long trip, and then he comes home, and there'll be another trip, and there's another trip, and there's another trip, and there's another trip, there's another trip.
I had this moment, I guess, right towards the end of when Stefan was gone, because last week we shared our LA Live show, so we weren't here to touch in as we normally are last week, live. So I guess a week or so ago, Stefan had not come back from his trip yet. And it was one of those things where everybody was finally asleep. I may have mentioned I have very loud kids, and lots of people do. I think mine are special, especially loud. And I had this moment, and it happens a lot, where after everybody's asleep, I think I still hear them. And it feels as if their volume has scarred deep into the walls, and that the echoes of my children, like, ring out throughout the night.
It's like after a concert.
Yeah.
It's like after you go to a loud concert.
And then you hear...
You're hearing
it's like
that
literally
loud.
A scar of their... Yeah. Of whatever they... Because it's like I hear... It's so live.
Yes.
It's so real.
Yes.
And I thought, this is the weirdest thing. And those were my words in my head, that like sitting on the couch. The scar, my house is scarred with the volume of my children.
Yeah.
And it just echoes back at me all day.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Never leaves. It's so weird. It's so weird,
it's like
guys.
It's an earworm.
It is. It is. It's like a ghost. It's like a voice ghost scaring the shit out of me.
Do you think even after they grow up and move away, you'll still be walking through the
right here, the screams of my children. And that there's usually screams of joy, by the way. It's not like they're like the scars of like harmful parenting moments.
No.
It's just like, I want a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it just like it just bleeds out of the walls and into my ears. And that's a thing they don't tell you in the parenting books, which I think segues nicely into something else they probably do tell you in the parenting books, but I'm too fucking tired to read those parenting books. We're going to talk today about how hard it can be being flexible and adjustable.
please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yes.
I'm using two very specific words here.
Mm-hmm.
Flexible and adjustable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are two different things for me right now. And I wanted to share them and hopefully not feel so alone.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the setup. I think when people like use the word flexible and adjustable, those are like positive things. Like, oh, you're getting mm-hmm. really flexible
yeah.
at your yoga.
Yeah.
Or you're really good at adjusting to changes,
yeah,
like all the time. How great and mature. But I am finding them very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I am finding being flexible very painful. And so in our house, I am currently given just where everybody is in their lives, the one who is the predominant president of most things,
mm-hmm.
while also having, you know, work needs and personal needs, mm-hmm. like doctor's appointments, car maintenance, you know, like all the stuff that I need to take care of for myself. But because of Stefan's job, it's very easy to find myself being the one who has to be flexible with what I may have scheduled or what I need to do, right? Like, oh, got to move this appointment because of something that's come up or travel. And it's the same with the kids. Oh, a kid's sick. I will be the first one to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Oh, the kids need to get to a certain class, or their class schedule has changed, or there's an activity schedule that's changed. I will be the one who accommodates and is flexible with that.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody's running late, or whatever it is that happens, it usually falls on me to be the one who has to accommodate it and roll with it.
Mm.
For example, I have changed a small surgery that I need to get done like a couple of times. I've had to move. I run the school carnival. There are no longer any weekends between now and school carnival that will be available to me. So I will have to figure out how to make those meetings work in a weekday, things like that. And I feel like the adjustable part comes when I'm having a hard time enjoying being in that position. Like I don't always like having to be mm-hmm. the flexible one, and that can sort of build up some resentment
mm-hmm.
and that can build up anger, and I'll be sitting there with that resentment and anger, and I will say, there's really no one else responsible for adjusting my attitude about this. This is my attitude. I am mm-hmm. the one who is walking around bent out of shape about this. And so I also have to be the one who is responsible for adjusting my attitude. I have to like find the energy to like get okay with it. And I want to stop here and say, this is one of those things. This actually in many ways has nothing to do with my kids and their needs and Stefan and the things that happen with his job. Okay. Like and it's sort of like the not liking parenting or having bad parenting days is separate and different from having kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being a parent. It's like this thing that's happening within mm-hmm. the world. I totally love Stefan's job. I wouldn't want him to change his job. There's nothing I need him to do differently that he could even possibly meet. Like mm-hmm. that is his job. And it is a good job. And I support that job. My children being involved in activities, I support those things.
Mm-hmm.
I support their needs. And if they're sick, of course I'm going to take care of them and make adjustments. Those things are their own things. And mm-hmm. I'm not like,
yeah.
Everybody needs to stop.
No,
you know
like
what I'm
this.
Saying?
I like this because it's very much like the, this is hard.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean like, oh, I wish I, like.
I never had kids.
Yeah. It's
right.
Like, it's, yeah. It's yeah. that
yeah.
same
so when
kind
I,
of thing. It's something that you're struggling with.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily like relate to
right.
like your life, bigger life choices.
Right. My kids
yeah.
and my partner
yeah.
cannot make my attitude adjust about this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be the one who's like, okay, let's get to a new
yeah.
headspace. Let's
yeah.
figure out how to make this work and be happier about it, or at least not
a lump of coal, like in a furnace, getting harder and harder, right? Like,
well, like, but sorry, sorry to jump in, but it's interesting that you are phrasing it that way in the first place.
Like, I'm trying really hard. That,
no, like, I like how you're phrasing all of it, but specifically with regard to that, it's up to you to adjust your attitude about it. Because if you think about it, you don't have to do that.
Sure,
that's you do have to be flexible. I agree.
Yes.
You have to be flexible. There isn't really a choice about that. The way you guys have your lives set up, you have to be flexible. But you don't have to be well adjusted about it. You could be pissy about it. You could be pissed off. Like,
yes,
but the person that suffers, I mean, probably your family would suffer too. But you are really the person that suffers if you're feeling miserable
all the
about
time.
Being flexible all the time.
Yeah, like, it's going to
be better for you.
Right.
If you can
adjust
your attitude about
like a lump of bitter
coal.
It's
not enjoyable.
Right. I don't like that.
And it would happen so much.
Well, yeah.
Because
it would be like I don't want to be in a permanent place.
Yeah.
Of coal,
right,
and that will
it's just
going to
keep happening. It's
seep
gonna keep
out,
triggered,
and if I don't think that would then seep out and affect my relationships, with the members of my family, which would then fold back over on me, So I guess what I want to talk about is how hard that is.
Yes. Yes.
That's it. I was talking about artists because I was realized I was driving here today, really trying to work on this.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, I feel like one of the reasons it's so hard, because in my brain, I know that this thing that I'm working on emotionally is separate and other, right? From what is set up, how my house is set up. Mm-hmm. I didn't marry an asshole and I didn't make two asshole kids.
Right.
Right? This is my thing. However, because of the very nature of the role that I am in, it is really hard, I think, for the people maybe in my family to see it as something separate. It's hard for me to see it as separate. Like, there is, because I am so intertwined with everyone at almost all times of the day, I feel like it's really hard for others and myself to see it as something separate that I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, right? Like, I feel like it goes back to that, like, am I other? Am I mother? What, you know, like if I am second in many of these different setups, it is hard to separate this then out, because to adjust my attitude, it kind of means I need to be first a little bit.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, it's really hard to, like, adjust your attitude when you're fucking resentful about being second all the time. Fuck. Pay attention to me. Fix it, everybody. Meh.
Well, it's definitely one of those behind-the-scenes
things.
And
thank
it may
you.
Be one of the most behind-the-scenes things.
Right.
Because we don't see, the outside world does not see us rearranging our lives for stuff. They just see us doing the stuff that we're doing.
Right.
Unless we're going around being like, well, I had to do this to be here because this person did that.
Let's
and because
save that
of this,
for genius moments.
Right. Yeah.
Right, because we don't share this stuff.
No.
Because people would look at you like you're a maniac.
Right.
And no one cares.
And also, no one cares. And it is so intertwined in our lives. Like, it's so much a part of every little decision and planning thing and every day.
Right.
So, I think it's tough. I think it's one of those things we kind of, like, crave validation about in terms of, even though I hear what you're saying about, like, Stefan's job is a great setup, like, you don't want to change that. And I feel the same to a great extent about my husband Jesse's job. But there is part of me sometimes that, like, would love for, like, the tables to be turned just so that somebody else would see all the things I'm doing.
Freaky Friday, like, that shit.
Yeah,
a
let's
bit.
Freaky Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like I don't want to be the ultimate breadwinner for our family.
Right.
And I really like being the person who rearranges my schedule when somebody is sick. Like, I'm like, I'll do it.
Well, see, no,
I
but
do that.
And that,
like,
can I just stop you right there and say that's the extra level of fucked up that I find myself wrestling with, where I also could no longer see myself with the setup being any different.
Right.
right? Yeah. Like, yeah, I like being mama.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And there's like even when you were talking at the opening about all the things that are happening, like, life-wise mm-hmm. while Jesse's traveling, mm-hmm. even when, like, Stefan's home, there's so much, you know, there's so much that's happening like, all the time.
Oh, yeah. Even if he was home, he would miss a lot of that stuff because he's working
right.
so much.
And
yeah.
there's like, and I can't, again, in that whole like keeping things separate.
Yeah.
I didn't marry an asshole.
Right.
He wants to see all that stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Like, and
totally.
He wants to be part of all
yeah.
that stuff. And there's also then the added responsibility of I need to be able to communicate and keep my partner up to date with like what's happening in our house so that he doesn't feel isolated mm-hmm. from the house, right? Like
yeah.
so which then goes back, right? Which then goes back to the
yeah.
like
that is the attitude adjustment. Thing.
Right, where
yeah,
you're like,
yeah, yeah.
no, just I'm gonna keep it from you.
Yeah.
You didn't even know
yeah.
that.
You
came out have to
should
have
I
the
should I text him with should the I... picture of what this cute thing that happened? Like if there's like no, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like there's this part of me like when I'm feeling bad and
yeah.
he's like off having these like
exactly.
grand adventures, there's this part of me that's like, why even share that with
yeah.
you?
This is
not relevant to what you're doing. But then I take a deep breath.
Folds over.
Right.
It's
because I remember actually we're a family.
Yes.
I love him.
Yes.
I do want him to be involved in this. He does want to be involved in this.
Right. It's the resentment burrito.
It's the yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it is that yeah. that like place of why it's important to adjust my attitude. Like, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be able to get the attitude adjusted to where I'm like one of those. I was watching this like House Hunters show
mm-hmm.
and there was like a woman on it, like and her husband and like the 2-year-old. She was just like, as she was describing what she needed in a house,
mm-hmm.
like she was just so happy about mm-hmm. like how much her husband worked. And then they needed this house with a boat dock because when he comes home, he likes to go off on the boat all
oh.
the time. And like, and how she needs a lot of space to play with her 2-year-old. Cause
uh-huh.
And she was just like so happy about it. And I'm sure it was a lie, but it was
uh-huh.
one of those stories that suddenly was
yeah.
being fed to me where I was like, why can't I just love being
oh,
that,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
I don't even want to be that. So I know that I'll never make
yeah.
HGTV level of, like, attitude adjustment.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not who I am.
Yeah.
But there needs to be an attitude adjustment so that I'm still, like, yeah, so that I'm still community, so that all the people in my family feel a part of the family. If
mm-hmm.
I am, like, the center of this family,
mm-hmm.
we go back to that conversation, who's the center of the family? And as being second or third in the family, the center of the family.
Mm-hmm.
but there is some truth to that. Yeah, I don't want my attitude to be so... A, I want to be able to make eye contact with the people in my family
right.
and not like just not even want to look at them because
right.
I'm so angry.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want that. That's not fun. And I don't want, you know, Stefan to suffer because of his work
yeah.
from not being connected to the family.
Yeah.
And I don't want my kids to be like... to feel like burdens, right?
Right?
Like, so again, it goes back to the question of how do I adjust it?
Yeah.
Because some of that I feel like is self-care.
Yeah.
But again, we are batting like,
you and I are both in a very rough patch
of self-care.
Lack of
yeah.
self-care right
the
now.
The consistency,
yes.
the
yeah.
like, and what we... What I put in as self-care
yeah.
isn't necessarily helping.
Yeah.
It may actually not be helping at all,
uh-huh.
right? You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it again,
yeah.
the responsibility falls so much back on me.
Yeah.
And I don't say that in a whiny way, but, like, I got to be okay with the flexibility. I've got to get okay
mm-hmm.
with being flexible. And I've got to be responsible for working in that self-care to help with the attitude
mm-hmm.
adjustment,
mm-hmm.
it feels like a lot of work, guys.
It's a shit ton of work. It really is.
Right?
It's a shit ton of work. And I think, like, it may go back to just, like, our kind of our mantras for each other
mm-hmm.
of, like, maybe nothing necessarily needs to change about
right.
this other than, like, we just want to acknowledge
yeah.
what we're doing. Like, it's the same as, like, you made it. It's like... I'm so flexible right now. Like, everything is working great because I'm being so flexible. Like, it's work. It's work.
Yeah.
And we should acknowledge the work that we're doing to be flexible. And being flexible is such a huge part of taking care of our families every day.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to, like, I feel like why I need to talk about it and why
why, like, I'm wrestling and working so hard on it is how easy it is to slip into it being permanent, right? Mm-hmm. Just as I don't want to become a permanent doormat for everybody in the house, right? I also don't want to become a permanent bitter pill where I see the people in my house as something, as assholes when they're not, like my kids, my partner, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like it's so easy to slip away. So I feel like, you know, into like, well, I'm always going to be this. And it's always, you know, like, I don't want that. You know, like I want to have a happy, healthy, you know, family setup. And I feel like talking about it, like, keeps me tethered, you know,
keeps me tethered
to the land before slipping away into, you know, that awful place where people's relationships and family dynamics can get to.
Definitely.
Right?
Like, yeah, I think, no, I'm
and that's why I'm like, it's other. It's other
it's
than.
It's very important. It's, and yeah, right. And it's not, yeah, and it's not other. Him and it's not them.
Right.
I get you. Right. I think also for me, I'm trying to think of like what other things can like alleviate some of this, like,
right,
some of the negative feelings that happen when I do have to, when I find myself having to be flexible about
something. You're supposed to be the, come on, Teresa, I need you.
I know. No, I think one of the things that works really well is seeing it not only as work, but like as an expected part of my job, as an expected part of what I provide for the family and something I can take pride in and something I know is coming. And when it happens, I'm ready for it because that's one of the things on my job list. Like, that's like being flexible is one of the things that I can be really good at and I can do for my family. And that's one of the things that like makes me great at what I do. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I completely hear you. Absolutely.
Because then it's not like a, because you can fall into that feeling of it's like almost like a surprise every time, even though it's not, well, where you're just like, oh, this? Well, so great. So that falls on me then?
But okay, I think, you know, it. No, but I 100% see the job requirement thing.
Yeah.
And I really see the validity of that. Mm-hmm. I think when I get to the coal place,
yeah,
I'm like, I don't want this to be my job.
Right.
How did I wind up with this job?
Yeah, yeah.
Where am I?
Yeah.
I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
To be honest, I have no idea what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I've had that.
Something better.
I've had that thing go through my head a couple of times, and I'm like, well, what the fuck would I be doing?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, and so it's that, but that goes back to the attitude of job. I mean, you know, get happy about your job, ladies. Yeah. Pull up your tights and light your torches.
Yeah.
We've got it, you know, but like, it's also, I think for me, it's still so much of that, like, 7 years in, you and, like, talking about this shit every week, you would think I'd be a step closer to, like, figuring out my identity post-kids.
But, I mean, but you like, don't have to like, you don't have to, so I think, I don't think you have to, like, pretend, like, oh, I love being flexible. This is so great. Another opportunity to be flexible. Thank you, universe. No, I don't think you have to do that. But you can, there is a way for you to be like,
spin it.
Oh, here, I hate being flexible. This is the worst part about my job.
Look at me growing.
But I know it's coming.
Right.
Like, and some kind
the
of
surprise.
Some kind of coping mechanism to help yourself when that happens.
Yeah.
Like, I get to eat a jelly bean every time I have to be flexible.
It's like the potty training flexibility.
Like,
jar.
Like, it doesn't have to be jelly beans, but like something that you like. Like, I don't know, some kind of coping mechanism so that you know it's coming. And when it comes, you can hate it that you have to do it, but
it's again, the get the
on.
Mouse through the through the maze.
Yes.
You know, the Pavlovian like ding flexibility.
Yeah. You got shocked, but you also get chocolate. Yeah.
Oh, that may be the best thing we've ever taken away from the show.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Third Love.
Psst. Hey, Teresa. Want to know a secret?
What?
bra shopping. Facts.
Oh, yeah. That's not actually a secret.
It's really hard. Have you ever taken your kids with you to go bra shopping?
Actually, yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah, that really sucks. But you can skip all the hassle and find a perfect fitting bra in minutes by checking out Third Love.
Third Love's Fit Finder Quiz recommends the bra that's right for your size and shape. Third Love is the only lingerie brand that offers bras in half sizes. Thank you, children. You can also try one of Third Love's amazingly comfortable bras free for 30 days. You just pay $2.99 for shipping. Returns and exchanges are free.
You can go to thirdlove.com/badmother to find your perfect fitting bra and try it for 30 days for free. That's thirdlove.com/badmother. thirdlove.com/badmother. Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Genius fail time, Teresa. Genius me.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
So, Grace, my first grader, hasn't been wanting to go to school. So, the mornings have been a little bit harder than they were last year.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It's,
so much.
It's really rough.
It is rough.
But last week, we were getting the kids ready for bed, and Grace was telling me how she's pretending with some of her friends at school at recess that they all have, like, characters that mm-hmm. they're doing, and she's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I want to be the Wicked Witch of the West tomorrow. Can I wear my black dress? Because she has this little, like, tank top dress mm-hmm. that's, like, black. And she had worn it 2 days ago, so it was dirty, and I knew that. It was in the wash. And I said, well, it's in the wash. And this is, like, late. It's, like, way late.
Yeah.
I know. I'm, like, really done. I'm there by myself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, yeah, no, it's sorry, sweetie. It's in the wash. Well, maybe I could wear some other black clothes. And I said, I don't think you have any other black clothes. Maybe we can find, like, dark purple or, like,
right.
something like that. And she's like, oh, I really don't know. And then something clicked in my brain, because I had been thinking, like, really? I'm not, after I get everybody to bed, I'm going to go do laundry?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Like, I'm so
yeah.
done. But then I clicked and I thought, wow, if I wash a dress for Grace and then she's happy to get dressed tomorrow and go to school, I'll do laundry all night long.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay. And I said, you know what, Grace? If you really want to be the Wicked Witch of the West tomorrow and you want to wear your dress, I'll wash it for you tonight. Would you like that? Yes, Mommy. Thank you so much. And you know what? It worked. I did the wash. The next morning, she was happy to get dressed and go to school.
You're doing such a good job,
thank
Teresa.
You. Thanks.
You really are.
Thanks.
That was good parenting.
Thank you.
Mine is just a... feels like the medicine story in Katie Bell might never end. But my genius is just... and I don't think I put this into words as genius. It's just that, like... medicine, for those of you who know, she had to take medicine. She didn't. And then I just want to say, I feel really good about helping my daughter by going back to the doctor, saying what you've done for us is not working. I need another option if there is one. Letting them sort out another option, finding that other option, and it working. We wound up getting capsules that you could, if we could teach her to take a pill, that'd be great. But we didn't. But you could open it up and mix the contents in with the applesauce.
Uh-huh.
And I had a long time talking with the pharmacist just about, like, how long can it be in the applesauce, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But it had no taste. It was just powder. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And so, like, and she took it. And,
oh,
you know, we'll
God.
See if it worked
That's
in
amazing.
The next couple of weeks. But, yeah. like, it was... I just was like,
good job.
I figured out this problem, and I took the extra steps, and I did it.
So good.
Thank you.
Such a good job.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm calling with a genius that I've been sitting on for months in case it all went horribly wrong. We have to get up really early in the mornings for school, and I've got 2 7-year-olds, and for the first several months of school, it was a nightmare. Having to drag them out of bed, we regressed to dressing them ourselves. And then we realized that they just had no concept of time in the morning. So what we did was we put together a getting out of bed playlist. They have one song to wake up to, two songs to get dressed to, and one song during which they have to come through to the kitchen, by which time I've got it together to have their breakfast waiting on the table. Once they do that, they know the exact length of time they have for breakfast, the exact length of time they have to do their teeth and all the other morning stuff, and if there's any time left over, they can read a book. But what really kills it is the four songs first thing, because they know exactly what's expected of them, exactly when. It's the same songs every morning, and it just means everybody has a lovely morning. It does mean I go through the day with the sound of music stuck in my head all day, but I am prepared to put up with that. I don't know where I got it from, the idea. It may even have come from this show, but whatever it is, I feel it's worth sharing again, because it has made our mornings fantastic, or at least comparatively so. There's always still a bit of a rush. I love the show. Thank you for everything. Bye for now.
Yeah.
First of all, it did not come from this show.
It didn't come from here.
Because Teresa and I are like fervently shaking our heads, because that is so
such a good
genius.
Idea. Yeah.
It really
so
is.
So great. Yeah. And like pick songs that maybe you like a lot.
Yeah.
That Yeah.
I mean, there's no guarantee that you'll stay liking them
I
after.
Know,
but like
but
still.
But like something, you know.
Yeah. Four songs.
It's really good.
It's really good.
It's really sweet.
It's fun.
And you're not like rushing them every, you know.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate. Yeah, yes, Teresa, it's sweet. It's like a thing that you've set up that fixes your problem, but will also become this really nice memory that your kids have about getting up.
Oh, I love it.
I love it.
Love it.
I love you. Failures.
Fail.
You suck.
Fail me, Teresa.
Okay. So, ever since, like, near the end of kindergarten, Grace has been walking the last block of school herself in the morning. Like, Jesse takes her. He says goodbye to her at the end of the street. Mm-hmm. She gets out. She walks the rest of the way to school and goes in and gets in line. It's a busy street, but it's all parents and kids. So, like, there's usually other parents and kids that she knows. She walks with them. It feels very safe. It's like a little independence thing that we did with her. And as far as we knew, it was working great. Around the time, of course, that Jesse went off on his trip. And, you know, as he was leaving, this is something that I probably would never have taught her to do, because I don't see other parents doing that. They have a safety valet right at the front gate, but Grace doesn't want to do that. She's, like, really opposed to doing it, probably just because she's never tried it. But you also have to, in order to do the safety valet, like, our school is on, like, a really turny, hilly road. And so in order to do it, you have to approach the school from the other side of the mountain, which is like kind of really hard to do. And so Jessie just doesn't do that because she doesn't want to do it anyway.
Right.
But I would probably never have taught her to do this just because I'm not as big of a risk taker as Jessie is, like, to put it very simply. But now that he's gone, it's my job to, like, keep things going and keep things, like, normal. And there was a part of me that was like, well, I'm just going to walk her in while he's gone, because that's what I would do. But she was against that because this is what she does. She knows how to do it. She does it every day. It's her routine. She's very proud of it.
And look at you being flexible and adjusting to what has been happening.
Exactly. And, like, I didn't want to, like, mess up their system that was totally working for them.
Correct.
Okay? So I was dropping her off there as well. She's, like, a meanderer and a wanderer and a total space case sometimes.
Yeah.
And, like, I would just sit there and watch her walking up the hill till she was, like, out of sight. And I'm just like, is she really just going to go straight into school? Like, there's, like, a tree you can stop and climb. There's, like, a hillside. There's a trail. There's, like, all this stuff. I'm just like, I can't believe, okay, I guess this is what they do. All right, fine, bye. And I leave. And so we did that, like, a few days. And then I started getting these, like, robocalls from the school saying your child was tardy or absent.
Right.
And I would call immediately and be like, well, which is it? Is she tardy or absent?
Right.
And they would say, oh, she's here. She's here. She just was, like, a little late. I'm like, what is going on? So I talked to her. And I'm like, you know, you need to go straight to school. Like, we've talked about this. Yeah. And I know Jesse has too. You know, you need to go straight to school, no stopping. And she's like, well, so and so's dad took me to the office because I had a stomach ache. And I said, what? And he found me sitting on the curb. You were sitting on the curb? No, I was sitting on the. Where were you sitting? Like, she was basically, like, stopping.
Yeah, she was stopping, and then other parents were coming by, yes, and being like, hey, what are you doing?
Yes.
Do you want me to walk you
and
in?
And being very helpful and wonderful. But, like, I had no idea happening.
Yeah.
These are people that I know, but, like, we don't have each other's numbers,
sure,
you know, whatever. And then I got an email from the teacher saying that she had just not gone into school one morning and hanging around outside the school and a parent
selling cigarettes.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And like a parent had come down and told her teacher, like, you know, Grace is up and won't come in and says she's coming in a minute.
Right, yeah.
And so anyways, the teacher and the principal had to go get her, and she was still kind of like, not gonna go in. Like, and then she said, my mom dropped me off down the street, and it took me a while to get here.
I have to walk 5 miles in the snow.
Yeah.
My mom just literally kicked me out of the moving car and said, go find your way to school.
So I don't want people to worry. Like,
no.
Grace is, like, definitely having a hard time in school right now and is something we're actively working on. I'm, like, in communication with the teachers and stuff. I don't take it lightly that she doesn't want to go to school. So I'm not laughing about that. I am laughing at how, like, fucking shitty and annoying and, like, embarrassing it is that, like, my wonderful husband who has set up this routine and then swiftly leaves the country and I'm the one who gets stuck here trying to do a good job, like, sticking with the program, and I'm the one that's getting in trouble for doing this weird thing where I'm the only parent that drops her kid off down the street and she doesn't go to school.
I just...
So now I'm walking her in.
Of course.
And not only that, I walk her past the spot where you're supposed to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I take her all the way to her teacher until I see the teacher.
Yeah.
Teacher sees me. She gets in line and I say goodbye.
Oh, Teresa. I just want to say, before I tell you what a horrible job you're doing, I just want to say, I actually am so thankful you shared this story because I'm totally the parent who, like, you know, finds kids randomly walking around the school. You know what I mean? Like,
and you're like, how did this happen?
No, I'm always just like, no, actually, I'm not. I'm always like this. Oh, hey, of course you're a kid wandering around school.
Okay.
You're a fucking kid.
All right.
But I think it's important. Because I'm so great. I never assume it's because some parents are doing a horrible job.
Oh,
I usually am like, you send your kids to school. And like, it doesn't mean that, like, kids aren't still sometimes wandering and meandering.
Yes.
It's, like, totally unrelated actually to what's happening at home.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so I thank you for sharing that because I know what a good job you're doing.
Thank you.
And I also totally see the logic in letting your kid walk the block to fucking school.
Yeah.
I think that's totally reasonable.
I know.
Especially, you know, it's all about your relationship and what you know your kid can do.
Yeah, exactly.
And now that you know what your kid can do, you're going to alter it until she's ready to, you know, to do it differently. But also, how dare you try and let your child have any independence.
I know.
Duh.
Yep.
You're just doing a horrible job.
I know.
So, in the process of Katie Bell, the original deal with Katie Bell's medicine, the liquid medicine, was if you take all your medicine, you know what? She got for her birthday an American Girl doll. God help us. We have entered that. I thought we were going to miss it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I never played with dolls. So she's always like, what am I going to do with the doll? I'm like, you are asking the wrong person. I don't know how to play with dolls. But anyway, turns out she loves this doll and it's great.
Good.
So
okay.
I had said, but it's very boring, guys, if you don't have outfits for the doll.
Right.
But
yeah,
I'm also not going to just willy-nilly get outfits. So
I
say, you finish all the medicine, we'll get a special outfit for your American Girl doll. She's like, great. And of course, 2 days in, I say, you understand this isn't happening. She's like, yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
So when we come back around to the new medicine, I say, all right, if we get through all the medicine, I will still let you get American Girl doll outfit. So we get through all the medicine, and she's so excited. She's going to get this outfit. And I had some work that needed to be done in the yard because, long story, but I had, like, a shit ton of, like, crappy cement that I hired her and her friend to do to, like, move from one side of the yard to the other. And I was going to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And they totally earned the money that I paid them. And I said, Katie Bell, you can now use that money if you want to get an extra outfit, right? So not only has she worked complain-free of this job that I had her do in the yard, she earned that money. Plus, she earned the outfit for taking the medicine. And so we go on. We pick the outfits out. I even got a $10 coupon. So we're going to get a hairbrush with it and all this stuff. 3 days, she decides that she wants to spend part of her money on the 3-day shipping. So instead of a new outfit, she's going to pay. It's going to go towards get it sooner.
Aww,
and I say, okay, go to bed. I'm going to order it. I start ordering it. And that website is a piece of shit, by the way.
Oh, no.
American Girl Doll, get your fucking website together. It keeps telling me there's a problem with the card. So no matter what card I use, it's saying there's an error. And sometimes, you know, those websites trick you into saving the card.
Right.
And then it suddenly works. Right. I go through all of this and it doesn't work. And I say, you know what? I'll do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Flash forward to Friday when these clothes are supposed to be arriving. And Katie Bell, like, is like talking about the clothes.
She, right?
She's been talking about it. I can't wait. I'm going to put her in the ballet outfit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I am so proud of my daughter, and I'm so glad we're able to give this to her. And I take her to school, and I come home, and I'm on the computer. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I've seen an email saying, like, I usually get a tracking email.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized I never ordered the clothes.
Yeah.
And so I call American Girl Doll, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Right? And so I order the clothes. I even throw in an extra outfit because I feel so bad.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone with my mother. I feel so bad. Yeah. I'm like ready to go get Katie Bell. I'm also now prepared for the fact that I'm just going to take her to Target and get the like
get something.
Get the 18-inch doll dress that they've got there.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get something to celebrate today. And of course it's Katie Bell. So when I go tell her, she has never ever reacted poorly to bad news. I go tell her and I pick her up and I say, she goes, are they here? And I said, Katie Bell, I have to tell you, I made a mistake. The order didn't go through. I've called today. It's going to be here Wednesday. I'm so sorry. Oh, it's okay.
What?
I know. And I was like this. Well, I also got you an extra outfit, and I also am taking you to Target to get an 18-inch doll. Like, I just think I still was like, oh, God, she deserves it even more. She's so nice.
Oh,
but like,
God.
I know.
Oh,
she's
so
much better than me.
Wow.
Like, she's so much better than me in a thousand ways. But I definitely, it didn't take the sting out of just feeling like
Oh, I'm sure. It doesn't make you feel better.
I felt still like
maybe you feel worse.
Worse.
Right.
I felt worse.
You haven't been punished at
all. I know.
All. Yeah.
I wasn't punished.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Oh, that sucks.
It really sucks.
Hi, One Bad Mother. I'm calling with a fail. So I was playing with my daughter the other night, and we were just goofing off, and she said, I'll kill you. And I thought, oh, my God, where could my precious baby have learned to say such a horrible thing? And I corrected her and told her that it's not very nice to say that. And then I distinctly remembered last week when I asked my husband not to eat any more of the tomatoes that I had gotten for taco night, or else I would kill him. And she was there and overheard me say that. So while I've been doing a great job at not cursing in front of her, apparently death threats are still on the table. So I need to further censor myself. Anyway, you guys are awesome and you're doing a great job. Bye.
I really love that. Like, don't you eat these fucking tomatoes.
Yeah.
I will kill you.
I will kill you if you eat
any more of these tomatoes.
Yeah.
This is clearly fruit I didn't label and have bought for the children. Well, you're doing a horrible, horrible job.
Yeah.
Just don't speak in front of your children ever.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call someone today.
Can you sing a song like that from now on?
From now on? Yeah. This is going to be the new intro to the interview.
Yeah.
Let's call someone today. This week, we are calling Lee Wind. Lee is the founding blogger of I'm Here, I'm Queer, What the Hell Do I Read? The award-winning blog about LGBTQ books, culture, and empowerment for lesbian, gay, bi, trans, questioning, and queer youth and their allies. Lee is also the official blogger for the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators and their 2015 Member of the Year. In his, I love this, Clark Kent job, he is the director of marketing and programming at the Independent Book Publishers Association. And his superhero job is writing inspired by our world's amazing and untold LGBTQ history. He is also celebrating the debut serialization of his hashtag Own Voices young adult novel, Queer as a $5 Bill. Welcome, Lee.
Hi. I feel like I should sing a hello.
But you are welcome to.
I think everyone would be grateful if I don't.
Fair enough. It's usually, my singing usually comes from weeks and weeks of sleep deprivation. So don't worry about it. Before we get into everything, we're going to ask you what we ask all our guests, which is, who lives in your house?
So in my house, in addition to myself, I live with my husband, Mark, who is an awesome guy. We've been together over 20 years. And our now teenage daughter.
Oh, you have a teen, a sweet, sweet. Everybody who listens to the show knows I love teens, and not in a creepy, weird way. But, like, I really have a vision of what teens will be like in my house, and it won't be at all like that. So how is it going with a teenage daughter?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's that, you know, she has two dads and there isn't that sort of classic conflict that teen girls are, you know, cliche supposed to have with their
right.
moms. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, touch wood. It's all going really amazing. It's such a cool adventure being a parent. And, you know, I totally remember, I was listening to the show last week and I was like, yeah, I remember, like, you know, when I was just like, oh my gosh, one more diaper, I'm going to just like cry. But, and I also remember bribing, you know, our daughter to, you know, use the potty, but saying, you want those Disney pajamas, you know? Like, I mean, so, yeah, I totally remember all those moments, but it's, you know, one of the things my sister-in-law said is that, you know, no matter what it is, it's going to change.
So, not the truth.
You know, when it's bad, that's a great reminder. And when it's good, that's sort of like, wait a minute. It's good right now. She's sleeping through the night.
Does she still sleep through the night as a teenager?
Yeah, but now she sleeps in, which is like, we never thought that would happen.
Oh.
We were very excited about that.
Lee, let's talk about the blog, which has been going on for 10 years. And what I would like you to do, because I will do a poor job doing it, is tell us a little bit about it, why you started it. And then we'll get into more questions after that.
Sure. So when I grew up, there was nothing. There were no books out there for kids or teens that had any gay characters or themes. Actually, I'm not exactly true. There was a pedophile villain in
right.
the book Dune, and then there was another villain in a historical novel I had read that was sort of like this creepy captain that was like hitting on the cabin boy who was the main character. But no one was ever nice. There was nothing. It was just a wasteland. And, you know, the fact that there was nothing that I could recognize made it really hard for me to just sort of figure out what it meant to be gay. And,
right.
I mean, I knew I wasn't into girls, but I had no idea I didn't even have a word for it. And what was so absurd was that I have an older brother, 5.5 years older, and he is gay. And we never talked about it. I mean, I didn't find out he was gay until I graduated from high school.
Wow.
So I just felt like there was just absolutely nothing. And then when our daughter was born, I ended up, I had a freelance job, and my husband had, like, a real job. And so I won, and I got to stay home. Some days it didn't feel like I won.
Right.
But I was home, and I had time when she was napping and stuff, and then when she went to preschool, and I was like, all right, well, you know, this blogging thing is taking off. You know, what do I want to blog about? I've been writing all my life, and I had a baby. I was writing picture books, and I thought, well, what can I do? How can I contribute? And I was like, you know, there actually are, like, a handful of, you know, LGBTQ teen books that have come out. You know, maybe I could talk about that. Maybe there's a list. Is anybody talking about it now? And so I went
nope.
and I started looking.
Probably not.
And when you did find lists, and there were a few lists, they just weren't, particularly useful.
Right.
And then Amazon, which was by that time already like the big player in terms of like how you could find the most books in one spot, their reviews are full of really nastiness.
Mm.
You know, like, oh, any book for kids. There was one book, this really sweet book about by Todd Parr, a picture book called The Family Book. And it just talked about lots of different kinds of families and had pictures of animals. And there was, like, a picture of, like, a duck sitting on the back of a, you know, a puppy, you know, with a whole row of puppies. And it said, you know, some families adopt children, mm-hmm. you know. So it was just, like, this really, really sweet book. And on one page, it had some families have two moms and some family have two dads. And it's a great book, and I talk about it on my blog. But there was some commenter who was like, if you rip out the page where they talk about the two moms and two dads, this is a lovely book on diversity.
Oh my God.
I'm like, wow.
Wow.
And I was just like, all right, this is what I can do. This is how I can contribute. I'm going to create a safe space online. I mean, nothing gets on my blog unless I've approved it. And I'm going to start writing about the books and just, you know, sharing what are the books that are out there that are these cute picture books that are inclusive of two mom and two dad families, or, you know, what are the chapter books that have, you know, sort of gender nonconforming characters, and it kind of grew and blew up from there, and in a good way blew up.
Yeah, well, I'd like to talk about sort of, you know, what you've been able to sort of witness over 10 years of doing this. Can you talk about sort of the different categories of books that are out there now and, you know, how this has evolved over the last 10 years? Sort of what have you been witness to?
Yeah, absolutely. It seems that, well, at first I just thought, okay, well, it's, you know, what are the books with gay and lesbian and bi and trans and questioning and queer gender nonconforming characters and themes that were their teens? And then it was sort of like, well, I was getting a lot of emails from librarians and people being like, well, I live in a really conservative area. You know, I can't actually carry any of these books. Do you have any advice? And I was like, oh, well, you know what? There is a category that's books with an ensemble that includes an LGBTQ teen character. So like The Misfits by James Howe is a great example.
Oh, yeah.
It's like about four kids. One of them is gay. One of them is overweight. One of them is a girl who is too outspoken for the comfort of everyone around her. And one of them sort of like a Fonzie character. And it's a great way of getting a sort of a gay character into the hands of a kid in middle school where the adult ally is not going to get shot down for it necessarily. So that started that. And then they were like, oh, well, there are books with LGBTQ parents and caretakers, or where the homophobia is the theme, you know. Then there was like graphic novels. I had some interns a couple of summers, and so like one of them did, like high school interns, and one of them did, they read graphic novels and comics all summer. And then we put up one of those categories, and another was really into short stories, so we did the short story category. And then, you know, talking about picture books, there were so many self-published picture books that were well-meaning but not particularly well-created, and I've tried really hard to not... I don't want to be like books Lee likes, because I think that's of limited value. I just try to sort of share what the book is, what's queer about it, and then give people the opportunity to comment in comments or, you know, be more of a resource. But with picture books, I just felt like if I start including every picture book, I will never get to the end of it. And not that I want to get to the end, but I just sort of felt like I don't think it's quality, it's of limited value. So I actually really curate the picture book category. Also, picture books are short. I can get through them. So that's just a category of picture books I wish had been read to me when I was a little kid, which is another way of saying picture books I wish my mom had had read.
But that leads you to a question of like access. You know, I mean, have you noticed just an increase in publishers putting out, you know, books with these themes and with these characters, like over the last 10 years?
Yes. I do think we are getting better. I think, you know, we've gone from, you know, the tragic queer novel where, you know, if there was a gay character, they were going to die at the end, to sort of a coming out story, and then to sort of stories that had sort of supporting LGBTQ characters, like sort of the sidekick syndrome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, starring in our own stories that aren't really just about coming out, like Rainbow Rowell's Carry On, which is sort of a Harry Potter-esque world where the main character and his nemesis fall in love.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
where it's just like, it's just part of the story. It's not what the story is about.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But it doesn't mean that there isn't always going to be a place for a coming out story. It's like, there's this great book by Andrew Solomon called Far From the Tree. It's sort of a nonfiction, like, you know, get it on audiobook, but it recognizes it's like 36 audio, like CDs. It's
gigantic.
Yeah, Teresa's like,
I'm reading
making
it.
A heart
no, yeah,
symbols right
I'm
now.
I'm reading it right now. It's totally amazing. I want to have him on the show, but it's
yeah,
huge. It's massive.
Just this idea that like when you are a child and you are the apple that goes far from the tree, and you know, you don't share some quality with your parents. Like, I'm gay and my parents were straight. So to sort of figure out who I was as a gay man, as a gay kid, I needed to sort of go outside that horizontal identity of my family and kind of figure it out elsewhere and find community elsewhere so I could, you know, understand better who I was. So I think that, you know, there will always be the need for a coming out story because we don't, you know, like my my husband and I and my daughter, she's straight, you know, and that's fine, and but it's not.
You've got
like,
to go get her,
you know,
all the straight books.
Yeah, yeah. So she exactly. Right? I mean, happily, our majority culture does a very good job of
say,
telling that story.
Those aren't too hard to
how
find.
How will she be how, able yeah, to figure out that she's straight?
I know. What will she do? Well, let's talk about other things that you are helping with normalizing and all of that on the blog. And that is a video series that you guys have, that you have called Gender 101.
Yeah.
Can you, it's great by the way, but can you tell us about that project?
Sure. Well, I guess I need to start out by saying I'm cisgendered, which means CIS is, it's like Latin. I know I sound so fancy. it's for on the same side of. Right,
okay.
And then as opposed to trans, which is on the other side of, right? So there's transgender and there's cisgender. So when I close my eyes and I'm sitting still in the world, I see myself as a guy. So I'm sort of, and then I open my eyes and I look at my body and it's a guy's body. So I sort of match my inner view of who I am and my outer body align, and so I'm cisgendered. Someone who for whom that does not align, it could call themselves transgender. And it's really important to let people label themselves and mm-hmm. not put labels on people. So I met a person who goes by two names, Benji and Lucy, and they physically present into the world characteristics that are both masculine and feminine. They have breasts, but a man's sort of facial hair. And I was really fascinated, and I'm a really curious person by nature, and I just was like, you know, please talk to me, tell me more. And as we started to talk, and I just realized how little I knew about this whole world of mainly 20-somethings who are identifying as genderqueer. And I thought, well, you know, here is a moment where I can be an ally. I have this platform. I have a lot of people coming to my blog. Let me do a series of video interviews with them. Them being the singular pronoun for someone that does not want to use he or she. And one of them, there's lots of them, but it's the one that's easiest for me to wrap my mouth around. And so we did a series, I think it's 35 or 36 video interviews, and then have around 20, the 25th video, we brought in some of Lucy Benji's friends who also identify as genderqueer, and we did some panels. So it's really, it was my education, but I was like, come along on the learning curve with me.
It's a really lovely series. It was such honest and good discussions. And have you, from between doing that and doing the blog, you know, has there been responses that have surprised you, like in a really good way? Have they... You know, like what's the response from people who are part of the blog?
I think that people are really excited to have access to the resources.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gender 101 felt very important in just that nobody was like, where do you go to find out this information? And I feel like that's still sort of an issue. I mean, there's so much misinformation out there, but. Again, it's like I think so much of what I'm doing is holding a safe space, you know, in a virtual way, and then when I am somewhere in person trying to do that, and I think it's been very appreciated. I mean, you know, over the 10 years, there have been a handful of sort of less than kind responses, but the vast, vast, vast majority, you know, 99%. Has been people being appreciative and you know, engaging on the information and on the topic. So that sort of sense of growing community has been really, really a lovely, lovely thing.
Well, speaking of sort of responses, I want to talk about bullying some. You go into schools and you give anti-bullying talks. A lot of it focuses on diversity.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, have there been sort of, like, what's the... as you're talking to the kids, I would imagine there are probably moments that really hit the kids more than other moments, right? Like that, aha, oh, ah, that makes so much sense. Are there aha moments that you feel you connect with the kids with what you talk about? And are there, what are things that we can be doing as parents at home to sort of help, you know, be setting the groundwork?
Okay, cool. I think there are two things. One of the things, this is probably my favorite thing to say, which is that the word homosexual is not helping. Because everyone in our culture, we have such issues about sex, and the minute that you say homosexual, all anyone hears is the sex part. And particularly people that have issues with imagining how people have sex. But it's like, I always ask, you know, when it's like middle school or high school, is I'm like, you know, who here wants to imagine their parents having sex? Raise your hand. Right? Like,
everybody runs from the building.
Nobody wants to imagine that, right? Like, so similarly, no one wants to imagine people that they're not attracted to having sex, which is probably a good thing in our world. But by calling it homosexual, we've really messed up, because all we make people think that we're about, that we gay people are about, is sex. So I feel like if we were talking about love rather than sex, like if what I could underscore when I talk about my family, myself, my husband, our daughter, to other people, is that the love that we have is very similar to the love that Biz, you have with your family, and Teresa, you have with your family. It's the same glue, right? That's what holds a family together. So if the word was homolovule instead of homosexual, if we were talking about homolovule rights and homolovule history, I think we'd get a lot further.
That's really interesting. I think you're right. There's something to just wording and, like, you know, context and what we lump onto language, you know, consciously or subconsciously.
Yeah. So I feel like that's my first kind of aha thing with kids. And then the other thing which has been really interesting to me, and I get as many adults responding to this as I do kids, is this idea that diversity is not just about ethnicity or skin color. And it's like diversity is everywhere and in everything. And, you know, there's ability and there's adversity and disability and people on that and people with different sort of cognitive sort of things and people on the spectrum, and then who you love and how you feel about who you are and socioeconomic status. And there's so much diversity. And I think that...
Do you mean that we're all a little different?
Yeah, shockingly, I know.
So
it all goes back to picture books, right?
Like, I mean, well, let's just go back to our own house and the horrible realization that our children aren't alike.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not even like us. What the fuck is happening?
But we get so caught up in these superficial things, like, oh, my skin color is the same as your skin color. We must share so much. Like, what? No. I remember the first time I was cut off in traffic by someone with, like, a gay pride sticker on the back of their car. I was so, like, personally offended. I'm like, wait. So I think in terms of what we can do, I think the most important thing is that we can be an ally to others. Mm. And to kind of, with our kids, and sort of, you know, if we stand up and then talk to them about it, like, I think that, like, when someone makes a joke that they think that you're on the in of, but it's really offensive, and you kind of say, I don't think that's that funny.
Yep.
You know, that actually is really offensive to people from that faith or whatever. I mean, like, and sometimes it's difficult and you can't do it in the moment because you don't feel safe.
Right.
And I've totally been there, and then you don't say anything in the moment, but you go talk to your kid when you get in a car, and you're like, oh my gosh, that was so uncomfortable. Let me tell you what Poppy wanted to say, you know, and then sometimes you do feel brave and comfortable and safe enough, and you're like, yeah, you know what? Not so funny.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, you know, going where you're not, if you're always part of the majority and your kid looks like every other kid in the classroom, it's really cool to go somewhere where you're not in the majority with your kid and be there as an ally. So, like, one of the things we've been doing in my daughter's school, I've been a sort of parent advisor to the Gay Straight Alliance Club for a long time, for 11 years. And one of the things that we've started to do, and not just me, but the other sort of parents that are involved in the other affinity groups, like the Black Student Association, the Latino Student Association, is we've all started going to each other's events with our kids.
Oh, that's great.
So, like, we went to the Asian family potluck at my daughter's school. And, yeah, we were one of, like, a handful of you know, non-Asian families that were there, but we were there as allies. And and there was definitely a little bit of discomfort walking in the door, and our daughter was like, well, is this okay for us to be here? And I was like, yes, it is. We were invited. You know, this is totally cool, and we're here to support them, just like they come and they support us at the, you know, at the Pride Project event, because they want to be supportive of our family that's different in our way. And I think that, that those kinds of things, those connections, that's how we start building community across these sort of imaginary boundaries that we've all created in our culture.
Yeah, that's such a doable thing. I like it when people can come and give us doable actions, right? Like, those are both doable things that we can be doing to you know, to start chipping away at these things that our kids are going to face and that we're going to face, you know, as they get older. I like active solutions that I feel are within my reach. <That's> really helpful when everything else feels like it's out of control. Now, we are starting to run out of time. Obviously, we could talk for a long time. I want to quickly let people know about your book that is now on the blog, coming out sort of in a serial manner, Queer as a $5 Bill. Do you want to tell us quickly about that?
Sure, yeah. So back like 7 years ago, I was talking to somebody, and they mentioned these letters that Abraham Lincoln wrote to Joshua Fry Speed. And I was like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of this. And it turns out that Abraham Lincoln wrote these letters to this other guy, and when you read the letters, and I kind of recognized it because I was closeted until I was 25, it becomes really clear that, to me, that Abraham Lincoln was in love with Joshua Fry Speed, like romantic love with this other guy. And again, not about homosexual history, but homolovual history. And I was just sort of blown away, and I just could not get out of my mind this idea, like, oh my gosh, if I had known that Abraham Lincoln was in love with another guy when I was a closeted 15-year-old, it would have changed my life. I mean, like, this incredibly, you know, idolized figure in our country's history, like, I don't know that I would have been able to come out, but it certainly would have changed everything about how I felt. And I thought, oh my gosh, I have to write that as a book. So I did, and I wrote this book, Queer as a $5 Bill. And then as I was doing the research and digging more into it and kind of creating this fictional story about this kid who discovers it and decides he's going to tell the world because that's the only way he'll ever be able to come out in his small, you know, homophobic town of Lincolnville, Oregon, his blog goes viral, and you know, rather than fixing his life, his life sort of explodes in this sort of media firestorm.
I would imagine.
He has to kind of figure out what is he going to do.
Yeah.
So as I was working on the fictional story, I was kind of like, you know what, there's a nonfiction book here too, because there's so much evidence, and it's crazy. It's not like hidden. It wasn't like Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, going and finding these letters in the attic of something. No, they're like published in like 8 different really big volumes on Lincoln. It's just sort of buried amid everything else. And nobody talks about it. And when they do talk about it, when they did talk about it in history books, it was all coded language that only other gay people at the time would understand. So as I started to pull this all apart, I was like, this is a nonfiction book. And so I totally expected, and the nonfiction book sold to one of the major publishers a couple of years ago, and it was very exciting, and it was actually going to come out this month. And I kind of fully expected that the book would be banned once it was out. What I didn't expect is that it would be banned in the process of being published. And 2 weeks after Trump was elected, I got a call that they were not going to be able to publish the book after all. And it's been 9 months since we got the rights back, and no other traditional publisher has stepped up and said that they're going to publish it, and either of the books. And so I thought, you know what, I have this platform, I have this opportunity, and I feel like this thrumming in the air about the atmosphere in our country has become so toxic and difficult, especially for LGBTQ teens. And I was just like, you know what? I think this book can make a difference. I think it can empower teens. It can make them really be thoughtful about, well, who writes history? And how do we find out the stuff about the past? And what does it mean that the history of men who love men is being hidden? And I think it can make a difference if in individual readers' lives and maybe even beyond that. So I decided I was going to serialize it on the blog. So last week I put the first 2 chapters up, and this Friday chapter 3 goes up, and people are starting to read it, and it's very exciting. So we'll see. It's a grand experiment, but I'm excited to finally have readers.
Well, you know what? We wish you luck on the book and how it's received. And we also want to make sure that everybody goes to the website. It's leewen.org, where they can find all of these resources that you've been talking about with us. Guys, it's such a good site for finding these books for young adults and for kids. And we want to say thank you for, you know, choosing to put this together 10 years ago. It's such a great source, and I think it's sorely needed. So thank you so much, Lee, for joining us and sharing with us everything that you've been working on.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. And Business Teresa, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. So are you. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
The Dead Pilot Society podcast brings you hilarious comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Aubrey Plaza, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, John Hodgman, Adam Scott, Molly Shannon, Busy Phillips, Tom Lennon, Anna Camp, Laurie Metcalf, Alicia Day, Michael Ian Black, Adam Savage, Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz, Skylar Astin, Mae Whitman, Josh Molina, Ben Feldman, Nicole Byer, Jason Ritter, Sarah Chalk, Steve Agee, Jane Levy, Allison Tolman, Danielle Nicolette, Casey Wilson, Anna Ortiz, Lorraine Newman, June Diane Raphael, Kiernan Shipka, Ed Week, Zach Knight, and Carrie Kenny Silver, John Ross Bowie, Jamie Denbo, Janet Varney, Alexander Torsani, Bruce Summer, Natalie Morales, Matt Gordy, and many more. Listen at MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
I want to believe.
Trust no one.
The truth is out.
Wait, why are we whispering this?
I don't know.
Well, the truth is out there. Ono, Ross, and Carrie is now weekly.
Every week, we're bringing you new investigations into fringe religious groups, the paranormal, and claims of the extraordinary.
And guess what? We're doing a deep dive into the world of UFOs and extraterrestrials all summer long.
We're going to tell you all about UFOs that are actually plastic bags, interstellar trading charts with Freudian bent, and the truth about owls.
The truth about owls?
That's Ono, Ross, and Carrie with new episodes every week at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
This program is not made on behalf of or with the approval of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, mostly because we never asked.
We really should get around to that.
That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, you know me. I like a list. I like being able to go and find my resources in one place.
Yep.
I know. We got
only the internet would have lists for you.
But you know what?
No, I know. This is a really good list.
They don't sometimes, right? And definitely not one as well researched and put together as this.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
It's not like, here's your top five.
Yes. Yes. No.
I hope you like any of the subjects of these five books.
Yeah.
Anyway, so everybody, leewend.org. It's great. You know what's also great? Listening to a mom have a breakdown.
Hi, One Dead Mother. This is a rant. As you can tell by the crying, I fucking hate corporate America. I fucking hate it. You know, I used to have a job, and I went, and I worked, and it was great, and I would put in extra time when necessary. But today, on my birthday, my boss decided to tell me that I need to work harder, and 40 hours isn't enough, and why don't I just go ahead and do email in the evening when my child is sleeping? Because you know what? It's fine to work your 40 hours and go home and have that 1 hour with your child as they're ranting and raving and needing that 1 hour with you. And then you go on and you're supposed to talk to your spouse or significant other and have a conversation with them. But no, that's not a thing. Because I need to go back online and continue to work. Because if I worked in the evening, I would get more done during the day, and then maybe I wouldn't suck at my job, because they think I suck at my job, which I don't. They fucking suck. So that's all. I hate corporate America. Thanks for listening. You guys are doing a great job. Bye.
Fuck that.
So are you.
Oh my God.
You are doing a great job. And this is so fucking real.
Yeah.
And there's so many things going on in this that are, I think, almost out of your control altogether. You're already committing most of your week to your job.
Yes.
All right, which is a lot. Okay?
It's so much.
And you're doing that on top of all the other stuff as a parent.
Yeah.
All the other stuff.
And as a spouse.
And as a partner, spouse, if you're with somebody.
This person is.
That's it's what we talk about 90%
of
the
time. Left?
What's
I don't
left?
Get it.
Where are you getting your time?
Yeah.
And then, I got to tell you, no matter what your job is, there is at some point, and even if you are not in a traditional job sense, there's that time after your kids go to bed and you've all wound up in that situation where you try and cram in whatever it is that you haven't been able to get done in that time slot. And maybe it works once or twice, but if it becomes a pattern or a routine or an expectation, it becomes a brick tied around your neck.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling you under.
There's just like nothing to look forward to ever.
Right, ever.
Point, because you're just
now
like,
I'm going to work all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is.
And no recovery time.
Yeah.
I mean, like how are you supposed to function the next day at work if you just worked the night before? I don't get that.
Yeah.
Why even go home?
Why even
go home?
Why not
just like sleep at your office?
That's right. That's right. Just bring everybody there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's.
Meanwhile, this is such a real problem.
Yes.
Like, we can say how wrong this is, but also, like, if my boss was telling me that, I mean, you're in this position where, you probably can't get fired from your job.
No. Like, I worked corporate for 10 years in New York.
Yeah.
And some of that time was with my daughter. And there's something very unique about that universe that, you have a phone. You have a work phone.
Yeah.
Just check your email before you go, but just answer those 20 quick things.
Yeah.
Or depending on what your job is, there could be travel. And so I remember my bosses would all be on other parts of the country and send me emails at like 2 a.m, right? Like, if I don't answer it then, their day's over by the time I get up and see the email. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's layer upon layer with work, and the corporate world has its own unique series of layers like this, and it is there. There's no taking it away. You're right. I mean, it's not like you can just like say fuck this or do a super shitty job.
Right.
You know, never in any of this do I hear you saying I want to do a shitty job.
Very few people are in a position to be able to say, no, I won't be checking my email tonight. I'm just not going to do that. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's correct.
Very, very few people are in a position of being able to do that.
Yeah. And so it is rant worthy and it's unfair and it fucking sucks. And we're really sorry.
Yeah.
You're doing such a good job. You're doing
really
so
are.
Many jobs.
Yeah, you're amazing.
You really are remarkable. Teresa, what did we learn today? We learned that being flexible is hard, even if it is part of what we do as parents. And what's harder still is making peace with that. In our own minds, so that we don't just become little, horrible, shriveled up, bitter, awful people. That's no fun. None of us want to be that. I don't want to be a horrible, bitter, shriveled, old, awful person who hates everybody. That was what my 20s were for. I don't want to do that in my 40s, guys. I want to, like, enjoy my family and enjoy motherhood and enjoy the other things that I want to enjoy. And I don't know how that's going to happen, but we're going to keep working at it. We're going to get really good at this.
Yeah.
And we're going to get out of our houses.
Yep.
That's great, guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're just going to talk it to death.
Yeah.
And that may be helpful too.
It does help.
It does help.
Yeah.
I bet I'm nicer when I go home today.
I think so, too.
I bet I will be. We also learned diversity in literature is great, and that books are really good, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're at a loss, I think, on like how to relate to our kids or how to figure out how to relate to our kids or just understand each other better, a book is a great place to start. It really is a very safe place to start. If you're terrified of people, just get that book And that's a good first step. So we want to thank Lee Wind for his website and all the resources he provides there. Everybody, you're doing a great fucking job.
Yeah, you are, you guys.
I mean it.
Yeah.
It's a shit show.
It is.
And it's also great.
Yeah.
And you get to have both.
Yeah.
And you're remarkable, remarkable people.
You guys are awesome.
You really are. Teresa, you are really doing a very good job. And I'm not saying that in a way that suggests I'm lying to you the previous weeks.
I know.
But I guess I'm not. But like,
somehow it's gotten harder since then. So I need
I need you to really hear me.
Thank you.
But I think you are doing such a nice job.
Thank you, Biz.
You really are.
I really appreciate that. And I also think you're doing a really great job.
Good, because I need to hear that. Really badly. Guys, we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, our producer, Kara Hart, our husbands, Stefan Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all of these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org/OneBadMother. For information about live shows, our book, and press, please check out OneBadMotherPodcast.com.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Well, Daddy may be fussing by, not throw down Mama Blue. Oh, said Daddy may be fussing by, not throw down Mama Blue.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.